History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold, and they don't have to go untold. As long as we're willing to take the initiative to ask a few questions and then commit a little time to patiently listen as memories that may not have seen the light of day for a while start to present themselves again. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories, so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. We get to meet another World War II Marine today who is barreling toward the century mark in a small California town, 99-year-old George Kincaid. I have a feeling that the town where you live is probably one of the most frequently mispronounced places to live. Tell us how to say your hometown.
Nukuyama. It's an Indian word for clam.
What's the funniest mispronunciation of it you've heard?
A Q. They use a Q instead of a, yeah, Nuku. They have, yeah. The worst is a Cisco Street. Nobody knows how to say Cisco.
Well, you just told us, so thank you for that. Well, and you've been here in your home for more than 50 years. You've been in California most of your life. But you weren't born in this country. Tell me where you were born.
I was born in Viking, Alberta, Canada. My grandpa and his brother had a wheat ranch, and they went 7 years with no rain. And my mom was from England, and she was visiting a friend of hers in Canada. And my dad and my grandpa went to a dance. Well, my mom was at the dance. They ended up going to get married. Then I was born, and 2 years later, they came to the United States. And they said, my grandpa settled in Marysville, and Uncle Charlie and my dad was in Maricopa.
And I didn't know this, you told me, because I've interviewed plenty of people who weren't born in this country and then came here and maybe even earned their citizenship by serving in World War II. You said you were automatically made a citizen because you came to the States before you turned two? That was the rule back then?
Before you turn your 2 years old, you're automatically an American citizen. But that's not the way now.
And you grew up in a place called Maricopa. What was that childhood like? This is during the Great Depression in the 20s and early 30s.
Well, my dad worked there, and I can remember back in the 30s, 27, 28, 29, 30s. He worked every day. He never lost any work. In 1927, I remember he bought a brand-new Chevrolet car, no side curtains, and, you know. And then in 29, he turned around and bought a brand-new Whippet. So he was never out of work. It was an oil town, all oil. That's where the Lake Crew Gusher was that blew in. And I forgot how many million barrels spewed out of that thing in 1 year. It ruined the oil field, you know. There were a lot of things down there. It's changed, you know. It's like everything else. It changed the streets, it's, you know.
But you said that word oil, and you've been around oil most of your life.
Yeah, I have. I worked for a burial company for the oil, and then I was in Mobile for a while. Then when I hit oil at Clama, well, I'd come up here, and, well, I was a field operator number one, you know. Well, my job was to, for ARCO, was to, when the engine quit, if I couldn't start it, then I called a mechanic, and the mechanic done it. A lot of little things you had to do, keep the water wells going.
And back to your childhood. So you're the oldest of three kids, growing up in Maricopa, and later on you moved to Taft and went through Taft High School. But I'm curious if you remember, as a boy, having some kind of ambition or dream, that thought of, hey, when I grow up, this is what I'm going to do someday.
Well, when I went to school, I thought I was going to be a draftsman. Yeah. I spent 4 years in high school learning how to be a draftsman and 1 year in junior college. But they only taught it for what they taught in 6 years. I took in 5 years. So that other year, I went to join the service, join the Marines. But as for a lot of things, well, you so little you don't think about stuff. What you're going to do or what you're going to be, you just live from day to day.
Well, and something happened. You mentioned high school and junior college there. There's something that happened your first year at junior college that kind of changed the world a little bit, because you graduated Taft High School in 1941. December, a few months later, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Do you remember where you were and how you found out about that?
I think we found out on the radio, because there weren't no television then. I just found out about the radio.
Was that alarming? Was that eye-opening? What was that like to get that kind of news?
Well, it was bad. It was bad, just like Russia is today. It's not right. Too many people die.
Well, when did it start to occur to you that you may be involved somehow in the war effort?
Well, they start drafting people, you know. You get the right age, they draft you. So I don't know why, I just said, well, I'm going to go join the Marines, and did. I was over 18. Since I joined the Marines, my brother, he was 17 years old, and he wanted to do the same thing. So Mom signed for him, and he went in. He was in the 3rd Division. He was at Guam.
And we're going to hear what you did at Saipan and Tinian. So the Kincaid brothers were a big part of what the Marine Corps did in the Pacific. You enlisted in the Marines. You made that choice. Did you know what you were getting into? What was that adjustment like to go from a civilian to a U.S. Marine?
Well, it's different. You got a schedule. It's rigorous. You go to San Diego. You walk and drill and drill and drill and walk. You got to get tough enough to handle it, see? I go down to L.A. the other, not long ago, down to San Diego, trying to find the air base, you know, stuff like that. It's changed. Everything has changed. I remember going in boot camp, the B-24 Liberator Bombers. Airfield was right next to the base, and they take off right over top of our barracks. Well, tents then. We lived in Tent City. During the war, there wasn't enough barracks to hold all the guys, so they put us in a bunch of tents. I've never found anybody tell me, but them B-24s, every time they took off, every day, they always took off with the bomb bay doors open. You could look up and see, and nobody seems to know why.
I've never had anyone mention that. I've interviewed a lot of B-24 guys, so I'll have to try to get that answer for you.
Yeah.
Was it challenging, your boot camp, your early training?
Well, yeah, it's rigorous. Get up early in the morning, walk, go to eat, just, you know, it's a lot of walking involved. You know.
What do you think motivated you? What drove you?
Oh, gosh, I really don't know. I just did it, that's all. I never thought much about that.
How did you feel about the idea of going overseas?
Well, you're a little apprehensive because you don't know what you're going to get into. You just don't know. They walked you on a big old ship. We went over on a USS President Monroe. It had a swimming pool in it. And the nurses and the officers would be in that swimming pool swimming, but us old listed men couldn't even get anywhere near it.
Had you ever been on a ship before?
No. Nope, never had. I figured when we left the United States, the ocean was rough. And I remember watching the big old destroyer escorting us, and that destroyer would be underwater 1 second and up on top of the water the next, just under and up. And I got to guard duty at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was up in the battleship, they gave me, and I started getting a little seasick. So I laid down. The captain guard come by, and Mr. Kincaid, you awake? Yeah, I'm okay. I just feel a little woozy. Well, okay, but don't go to sleep, because I heard later on that, it wasn't on that ship. We was going from someplace else. It was on a Dorian. It was a ship that you overhaul ships in. They'd run a ship in the back of it and overhaul it and take it out. Well, it was all closed back up, and they made a boat out, and some guy went to sleep on guard to it, and we heard he got executed, but we don't know how much truth there was to it, because it's a death penalty if you go to sleep in the war zone. I mean, they didn't do that in civilian life, but it was pretty bad.
No pressure.
Yeah.
So you stayed awake?
Yeah, I stayed awake. I was all right.
Did you ever get seasick?
No. Yeah, on a fishing boat. Him and I went out on a fishing boat, and I got sick. No. Yeah. It was a birthday gift. The wife gave us for to go deep fishing out of San Simeon. Oh, man, we got sick. So I'd come back and give the money back to the wife.
Well, you know, people think of Marines, and they have certain ideas of what a Marine does, but there are a lot of different things a Marine can do. What was unique about your duties and your assignment?
When we left New Zealand, we went to Tarawa, but they didn't need us. I was in a, 18 combat Marines, combat engineers, but they didn't need us, so we didn't get off. So we went straight from there to Hilo, Hawaii, and we were there for, get the combo together. You've got to replace the guys that all shot, that were killed. You got to bring you back up to command, I remember while I was on there, the air base at Hawaii, there were Hellcats and Wildcats and Bearcats would strafe our village all the time, practice strafing. It was quite an ordeal,
With real bullets?
No, no, no. They just dive at you, you know. Just, you know, make you, you know, to do that, see. Because we was there on Liberty for, what was it, months, 6-7 months. And I wanted to say I had Liberty. So I went down to the Naval Yard, and got a tour, went around the sub that had just come back from mission. So it's very interesting to go inside of one of them things, you know.
Those World War II subs aren't like the ones we have today.
No, 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 no. They're small, you know. Like where the periscope is, the table where they eat, and when they eat, when they get to eating, the table's all gone. You know, it's just not like some of these ones you see on television, see? Well, we had a guy, old Churchill. He was the boss of the electrician department, and I didn't know until later, but he was a tall guy, too, and he was a submarine commander. And they went on a mission and done, you know, some special deal, and they were supposed to take the conning tower off of that sub and make it a memorial. But I don't know if they did, but I didn't know he was a sub guy left. He's gone. So many guys they did a lot of things in the war, but you don't know it. You don't know to read their obituaries and find out, you know, what they did.
That's why I do this program.
Yeah.
So we hear stories from guys like you and not read the, well, he never talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, we want to hear these stories. They're valuable. They help us understand the price that was paid for our freedom. And you mentioned something else there. You said with those 18th Combat Engineers, part of the 18th Regiment of the 2nd Marine Division, that you guys arrived at Tarawa, or some people say it Tarawa, but
yeah.
That was one of the bloodiest battles in the Pacific in November 1943. I'm sure you've studied about that battle. You know some of the stuff that happened there.
Yeah, I've got a lot of pictures of it too, see? Yeah. But we never got off the ship. But we sat there all night long and watched the battle wagons shell it, you know? And them shells would come out of them big 14-inch shell guns, and they're red hot. They don't have tracers, but it's hot from the...
So you're a 21-year-old kid halfway around the world on a ship, and this is the show you're seeing, is all these shells going in on a tiny little area of land.
Yep, it was. Yeah, I think it was one mile wide and a couple of miles long.
Uh-huh.
But it took 3 days to secure it, see?
Also cost a lot of lives.
The tide was out just about, but the Amtraks and the amphib boats that haul the boys in there, and then they'd shoot them, and they'd have to walk some of them. In the water. The water's so shallow, they'd walk clearly out. And them guys out there, and the Jeffs out there was pecking them off as they're walking in the water to get there.
You could see that, too?
You could see it from our ship, yeah. They'd drop a mortar shell right inside of a Higgins boat and poof, or Amtrak, and it'd disappear.
Well, and that was one of the painful lessons learned in that battle, was that those coral reefs were going to be a problem. And later on, they'd go blow up some of those reefs so that the boats could get further in.
Well, yeah, that's where the demolition guys come from, see?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Sit on that deck on the day and watch boats come back with the wounded, just one after another. Guys all shot up.
Well, and that's what I'm getting at here, because I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. This had to be hard to see. I mean, this is your first taste of combat. You're not participating, but you can see what's happening to your fellow Marines.
Yeah, we did. We saw it all. I know there's a colonel. Colonel got shot, and the bullet hit him right in the helmet and went right around, never killed him. It hit the metal and went right around inside the helmet. And it was after that they come out with a law that they wouldn't have no insignias. The officers didn't have no bars on them, so they could know who to shoot and who not to shoot.
Well, and just, you know, from a human perspective, an emotional perspective. How did you process that? How hard was that to watch what you were seeing there?
Yeah, it's hard to watch, yeah. It's hard, but you could do nothing about it. That's just it, you know. You just had to do it. You had no control over it.
You know, was it a relief not to be called into action there? Was that painful to know that maybe you guys could have helped? Or how did you feel about your guys being there but then not being needed?
Well, you felt good that you didn't have to go out and get, you know, didn't have to go and get shot at or something like that. But you still felt sorry for the guys that were there. There's just, like, I think they killed 2,400 men right there in 3 days.
And you said you saw some of those wounded coming back.
Lots of wounded. And then a lot of dead bodies floating in the water. Japanese bodies, American boys. Yep. Yeah, and they're hoping they don't do it again.
Yeah, and I don't want to put words in your mouth or thoughts in your head. I'm just curious if, again, you're a 21-year-old kid watching all this. When you see that, is there anything inside of you that says, hey, that could be me?
Oh, yeah, it could be me. If you're there, it could be. Yes, it could be. Because I know a lot of guys there that didn't make it. after we got to Hawaii, I met a guy there that he didn't have a shirt on. And a sniper got him, and he shot him right in the chest, and his heart was a-beating. And as the heart, you know, wasn't pumping, the bullet went by, missed his heart, then his heart pumped, and then his heart went over, oh, you know, where the hole went through, see? And that you could see the hole in his chest, and you look at his back, and there's a hole in the back. And then when we went to Saipan, he got killed. It's just, you know, it's just weird how things happen.
Indeed it is, and sometimes it's kind of hard to make sense of it all. It's time for our first break, but we'll hear about more of the history that George Kincaid witnessed firsthand when we come back. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook for photos and a short video with this soon-to-be centenarian. And I think we may have an answer for his age-old question about B-24s and those Bombay doors. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.